Welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers. I'm your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and I am so thrilled to introduce our guest tonight, who is Pat Robertson Rice. Now, normally I would give you somebody's biography, but this is what I want you to know about Pat before we get started. First of all, she came and sat in with me because she was visiting when all of a sudden I had a guest not be able to make it at the last minute. And for all of you that are regular listeners, thank you so much for doing that. She came in, and so you've already been introduced to her once. But the story I like to tell about Pat is that I heard of her when I was living in China during the years of 2008-2009. And so I heard of her at the beginning of that time period in 2008. So I thought, okay, I'm going to give it a try and just see what she's like. So she gives this soul reading, which is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And then you have a chance to ask questions. So I asked questions. My opinion at the end was, she does this incredible job of these soul readings, but she's not so good on these answers. There's no way that stuff's going to happen. Okay? So I thought, but her soul readings were just awesome. Well, 1 month before I was going to leave teaching in China to come back to the United States, I was going through everything because I could only come back with the same two suitcases I went over with. And so I was even going through tapes of any reading I had had or anything I'd done because everything I didn't need to bring back, I wasn't bringing back. And so I listened to the tape again. And did you know that 100% of those answers she gave me that I thought, no way in God's green earth is this going to happen, every single one of them happened. And I know she wasn't picking it up from me because I would have been going, nah, I don't think so, the whole time. And so it's the only reading I have ever had in my entire life where 100% of what she said was going to happen happened. Now, that to me is absolutely remarkable. Now, you don't have to put her on as high a pedestal as I have her on, but I think she's incredible, and I am so thrilled to share Pat Robertson Rice with you. Pat, welcome to Know the Name, Know the Answers.
Thank you, Sharon. I'll give you $10 for that promo now when we get off the air. But thank you for having me tonight. Anyone would like to come and be on your show, that's for sure.
Well, thank you, Pat. So we are in such tumultuous times. I mean, every day it seems like there's something new. Somebody's got a new slant. Somebody's got a new angle. What do you think is, as we're going through this, is the opportunity for every soul's growth that we're being presented with while all this nonsense is going on?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that because my phone has been ringing off the hook and people are saying, what in the name of God is going on? So the first thing I would like to say to everyone is a cliche and a saying that just about everybody has heard, and that's that God works in mysterious ways.
And
none
yes,
of us understand
does.
How all of a sudden this virus comes and the entire world economy, you know, is thrown haywire and people are out of work and their lives in upheavals and so forth. And so what I would like to talk about is what seems to have come out of the readings I've done for people, that there are two basic spiritual lessons going on here. Now, every time, you know, you're in a lifetime, you are supposed to have obstacles when you're here, and your character is formed from the way you go about handling them. It's not how it turns out. You may not win, but the fact that you were on the team and gave it the best you could is the important thing. It's what shapes your character. So we have two things that have been thrown. The gauntlet has been thrown down. We have to face our greatest fears. And our character is going to be shaped on how we go about doing that. Now, for some people, the fear is money. For some people, it's job. If they lose their job, they lose their identity, you know. For some people, it's the death of a loved one. For some people, it's the fear to even go out of your house for the fear that you will contract it. For some people, it's food. So we're all, no one is escaping having to face your greatest fear. You don't have a choice. It's just there, and we have to step up to the plate and do the best we can. The second thing that's being given a spiritual lesson is that I think everyone on this planet would agree that we're just not real sure if the United States, I'll just stick to our country, is going in the right direction sometimes. And we all wonder what in the world is going on. And so this fear is all about what's really important to me. What do I want to fight for? Do I want to fight for my family? Do I want to fight for my job? Do I want to fight to change the laws in my country? We're being asked to examine the principles that we want to live by. What do we want to stand up and fight for? Now, the one I would like to address that seems to be what most people have called me about has to do with, okay, let's talk about my job. What in the name of God am I going to do? I have lost my job. Well, there are two things you need to do right away. You see, fear cripples you. Fear immobilizes you. Fear makes you feel like you have no power. But if you get a plan, and if you decide 1, 2, 3, 4, this is what I'm going to do, then you can breathe a little better, and then you can come back and get yourself collected and go ahead and get started. So the first thing that everybody, whether you're out on furlough, whether your boss is paying you for 1 month, you know, let's see what happens, or whether your business closed, everybody needs, in our situation, to have gone to the unemployment agency and gotten the forms, whether you have a job or not. And for the people that didn't have a job, of course, they need to stand in the long lines, I'm sorry, until they get these forms. Now, the government is definitely stepping up its game. Asked Siri today. I said, look, what percent of the households in the United States have a two-person income? And only 12% of the working households do not have two people bringing in money. Now, some people like me are on Social Security because they've already worked hard. But so that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about people with kids and, you know, 20 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old before you retire, that kind of thing. And so I said, okay, what's the average income per month? Because our unemployment is going to give you 6 months, 6.5 months. So if you live in the South and the incomes aren't as much, they said the lowest paying one was $358, and then the highest paying one in the North would be $958 a month. So you take your $358 times 4, and you're making $1,400, unless my math's wrong. And if you take you almost $1,000 a month, that's going to be $4,000. So once you start getting your Social Security, you can definitely make a dent in paying those bills and, you know, getting the things you need. Then the government was very nice, and they said this is extenuating circumstances, and so we're going to give $600 more on, you know, what you're making on your income. So what has happened is that some people are making more money not working than they were making on their job. And that happened to my brother, who has a restaurant. And so he was given the signal that he could open his restaurant up, and he called his employee. Now, he was paying his employees, you know, that first month. He was nice to them. He said, well, come on back to work. We can open the restaurant. And they all said, well, we're making right much money, and we don't really want to come back right now. And he said, I totally get it. I understand it. But he said, when I do open and you don't come back, then these are the people I'm going to have to be loyal to. And they all said, fine, because now the government has extended this 6 months of benefits to 3.5 more months. So you're hopefully going to be able to be on your feet if you think of it in the amount of money that's coming in, okay? Now, the second thing you need to do to give yourself a little confidence here. Sharon, is it all right if I keep going?
You keep going. This is what we all want to know.
Oh, okay. So the second thing you need to do is almost like, I'm taking over, I'm independent, I'm going to fix this for my family. And the people I've counseled with said, you know, that's a great idea. You need an emergency fund. You need a contingency fund, something that you're not going to touch. And so what we decided was that there was a lot, my clients and I, was a lot of stuff in the attic that had never been gone through. And there was a lot of stuff in the garage so that you couldn't even get your car in there. And one man I was working with even said he was going to give up his motorcycle. And he was 40 now, and he just really didn't ever have a chance to ride it. And, yes, that was going to be an $8,000 thing they could put in the kitty. So you go out, you know, you get your articles that you can sell, and dear God, they'll buy anything online. You all know that. We all look on eBay and Marketplace and things like that. And then some people will have a yard sale and or what have you. So all of the money that you make from turning things you don't need, and yes, it's going to be hot climbing in the attic, and yes, it's going to be dirty getting them out of the garage, but the whole family can work on that. And you sell them, but none of that money goes in your pocket. It goes in a contingency fund so that you don't panic if the wheel falls off the car. You got it covered, okay? Or if your son breaks his arm and you need to go to the emergency room and you don't have your insurance or what have you, you've got it covered. So you need to feel a sense of power. You need to feel that you've done something, okay? Now, the other thing is that we have a lot of situations here where both people are home, one lost the job, and one is working. And so when all of this disaster happened, I heard the funniest little comment when all the businesses shut down, everybody went home. It was on the nightly news, and this commentator said, well, you know, with all these people going home at the same time and being in the same house, he said, we're going to probably have a national epidemic here of births. And the other commentator said, yeah, or divorces. So a lot of people have not been together. I mean, they work 5 days a week, and, you know, here they are all of a sudden 24/7 in each other's face. So what they have discovered, and I'm going to speak first for males, and then I'm going to talk about females. What they have discovered is, oh, my God, I can do this job from home. And I don't have to go somewhere on Zoom and have a meeting with my team, but on Fridays. And, yes, I can email them and make sure that the report's done, or I can talk to them, you know, on a screen, you know, on my phone or however you want to talk to them. And you know what? I don't miss getting on Amtrak. I don't miss getting on the bus. I don't miss getting on the subway. I don't miss wearing a suit 5 days a week. And the thing about your job is that it's got to change. Now, in small towns, it's not going to change, maybe. But in large cities, number one, the modern job workplace is full of light, wide open concept. There are no cubicles, except maybe the president gets one. So you can't go back there with all the air and no separation of, you know, social distancing, no plexiglass between the things. You can't ride on the subways with 3,000 other people in rush hour. That's not social distancing, even if you wear a mask. So what they're proposing on the news, and I mean, when you read about the workplace and everything, is that perhaps a lot of people will go now to some people coming in at 6 in the morning and working till 2. and some people coming in at 7 in the morning and working till 3, and some not coming till 8, and some not coming till 9, and some not coming till 10 and working till 8 at night. And so they're thinking that if they stagger the hours that people come to work, they may, in not large cities like New York, but in smaller cities, they may be able to cut down on mass transit and being so closely packed on buses and things like that to get where you're going. So some of you males, and I'll speak to females in a minute, have a time to, you know, you can talk about what you want. In other words, are you a person that wouldn't mind being at work at 6 o'clock and have plenty of sunshine and stuff like that at 2 o'clock when you come home from work? Or are you a person that's a night person and suits you fine to go into work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and get off at 10? So are you a person that they have what they call a hot desk? And so one day a week, Mary uses the desk, and she stays home for, and one day of the week, Susan uses the desk. And this is something new they're saying. All people don't have to come in every day. They can have one person in charge on Monday and a different person in charge of her team on Tuesday, and they may get more efficient work that way. And then, of course, the people can stay home now that we have, you know, technological advancing materials where they can even have a meeting. Oh, dear Lord, some of them have 8 people on the screen and they're all talking to each other at the same time. So they're talking about that the face of what work used to look like may be a blessing in disguise, that you might be able to shape your job for what you would like to do, your hours, your flexible hours you would like to have. There may be a benefit in that. You might like working from home. Now, ladies, I'll talk to you about a friend of mine. Last year, she had about a $35,000 a year job, and she had 3 children under 5. Obviously, she didn't know about birth control, but anyway. So,
okay, that was facetious. Okay, just to let everybody know. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so she decided that she would just see what she was paying in child care, you know, to send her kids to be taken care of while she worked. So I asked Siri about it, and she said the average household pays $611 for child care per month. So she said when her accountant figured it up, that out of her $35,000 a year job, she was only bringing home $28,000, and she was paying out $16,000 in child care. So she decided she didn't want to go to work. She wanted to stay home with her kids. And the accountant said, look, he said, you need to understand something. You don't have to figure out how to make $35,000. You only need to help figure out, once you take away child care and all the expenses go with that, all you got to do is figure out how to bring $12,000 home, $16,000 from $38,000. He said, you go out and get your $12,000 a year job, and you'll be making the same amount. And when she told me that, I thought, oh, my God, that's amazing. And she gets to stay home with her own kids because she's not paying for child care, and she's not paying for gas to carry him. So, I mean, you know, it was an amazing concept to me. So then, of course, the question about jobs for both people is, how am I going to make this extra money? Well, you know, this has been since the beginning of time. It's called barter. And when people have a skill, let's say that you were a person that designed the parties for your corporation and you now don't have a job because that corporation went under. Well, it would be real simple to make yourself a real cute business card and get some flyers and start doing birthday parties and anniversaries and weddings and start your own business. If you're a soccer coach and your school isn't going to have an athletic program, started when school starts, so you don't even know the school's going to start, you know, and you coach soccer, well, I don't know why in the world you couldn't make you some money doing private sessions doing private lessons with people whose kids are good at soccer and want to improve. You've got time on your hands, and so do they. The kids aren't even in school. So this is a win-win situation. I helped a lady the other day who was bilingual, and she'd lost her job. And I said, well, you are fluent in Spanish, aren't you? And she said, yeah, what am I going to do? I said, honey, you're in a gold mine. I said, anybody in the hospitals this day and time would like to have somebody who was fluent in two languages, if nothing else, but to help the people who are sick to see what they're saying. And I said, and any lawyer that's in a community where they have bilingual people would be very happy to have someone help translate legal documents and things. She had a job the next day. She never thought of being bilingual as a plus. She never saw that that made you with a notch a little bit above on somebody hiring you this day and time when we have so many people sick. So I'm saying that to the ladies out there who've lost your $35,000 a year job, if you stayed home instead of going out to your job and could find part-time work or a part-time job, a job that, you know, only you take at Christmas time to make the extra money, and then the other 6 months out of the year you're not working, you're with your kids. And I think the big question is that I always ask people, okay, now you've been home 2 months now. Are you wishing that you were home with your kids more? Or are you wishing that you were back at work? You see,
That's a great question.
It is. The coronavirus, you know, you're 20, you go out and get a job, you get married, you get a job, you have a kid, you go back to work. Nobody ever took a breath and said, you know, do I have a choice? That's just what we did. It's just what we did. We went to work. And now that you've been home and you're off of some of the pressure, well, if you're working from home, you probably got more pressure with the kids home, you know. I mean, I'm being a realist here. But I'm saying that in 2008, when we had that really bad downturn of the economy and they decided the way to fix corporations was to fire the president and take out the $300,000 job or the $500,000 salary. And those men lost their identity, you know, and they said, what am I going to do? I mean, I don't know how to do anything. And a lot of them, after they were interviewed 10 years later, they were looking at psychological profiles, and they said, oh, my God, you know, I did what I've always wanted to do. So here's another point. You know, we always say, well, now when I retire, I'm going to do so-and-so, or if I ever had 5 minutes to myself, I'd build that china cabinet for you, honey, or if I ever had any time, I would go over here and design this real pretty yard you've been talking about. A lot of people really are not fulfilled on their job. They're frustrated, they're angry, they don't make enough money. There's so much taken out. You got to have your health insurance taken out, and you're socked into a house payment, and you don't have any wiggle room. And you just wonder where your money is at the end of the month. And so a lot of these executives said, you know what? I did some things I had always wanted to do. And one of them joined a band and played his saxophone again, and one of them started a woodworking business. And, folks, I'm going to tell you, this is the only time in the history of the world that your government is going to pay you $1,000 a month to see if what you've always wanted to do was to start your own business or work.
Well, that, you know, that part's very exciting, and I really see bartering coming back in a lot.
Why
do we have to exchange money? I mean, I just did that for a haircut. I thought, I can't get to the back of my hair. I can chop the sides. But no, I had a friend who knew how to do haircuts, even though that's not how she makes a living, and she came over and cut my hair, and we exchanged services.
Well, I think that's how I do. I get my taxes done that way, you know. I get my yard cut that way. I work with their kids. You know what I'm saying? And it's pleasurable to trade like that. I think it's very pleasurable when you have something like that. Now, the other thing, Sharon, do you want me to talk about the other one, or you want to talk a bit?
Well, I just want to take one call really fast because she has been on the line ever since the very beginning of the show, having incredible patience. Her name is Danielle. And so, Danielle, bless your heart for your patience. And anybody else who would like to call in and ask Pat a question, the number is 888-627-6008. Danielle, what would you like to ask Pat? I'm wondering if Don, if she's still there, if Don can get her or...
Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, now we can. Thank you very much, Danielle. Danielle, welcome
perfect.
To Know the Name, Know the Answers. What question do you have for Pat?
I was just wondering what she sees in my love and career life recently. I just got out of a relationship at the beginning of this whole virus thing, and I'm in between careers right now, and I feel like my life is just a mess.
Okay, so we got to ask one specific question for how Pat works, okay? So do you want it on work or you want it on love? And I'll help you formulate it.
I'd say love, please.
I need your full name, Danielle, and where you live.
It's Danielle Amanda Normandia.
Oh, that's pretty.
And she's from Delaware.
Okay, and you're in what city in Delaware?
Willits.
Willits, Delaware. Okay. And tell me again, you're out of a relationship or you're trying to get in. I mean, I'm sorry, I was listening about work and then you said relationship. Tell me again what the situation is.
Yeah, sorry. I just got out of a relationship about a month and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
He ended up having commitment issues and I felt like he was just scared and he broke up with me.
Well, that and how old are you?
26.
That's a fabulous age. Okay. Now, Sharon, if you want to tell her a little something about her name right now,
While you're figuring it out?
I was just sitting here. So, you can tell her something about herself, and I'll get this information for her, okay?
Okay. So how Pat works, just so that you all know, is she asks a series of questions of her team that she works with up in spirit. And so she figures out the answer that you're requesting from asking her team a whole series of questions and getting those bits and pieces. And then she keeps rewording the questions to make sure that she's hearing it right. And then she always asks at the end what percentage of this answer that I have now received is correct. So she's constantly double-checking it. It goes to her accuracy, but it makes her a little bit slower getting answers. So, Danielle, have you ever thought about becoming a writer? You've got that in your name.
When I was a little girl, I wanted to be, but I'm dyslexic and very indecisive, so I gave it up because I could never think of what to write. It would always be the same stupid love story between a guy and a girl, and it was just terrible.
Well, one of these days, I think you're going to have a lot to write about. And for dyslexia, you know that that's passed down in families. So I'm sorry to my kids. One of mine got it. I've got it. Sisters have it. You know, I mean, it's passed down in families. And did you know that when you're in a teacher's classroom, that we've all been taught that people that are dyslexia are a little bit smarter than the average person, have to be able to cope. I don't know if you knew that. And so, So this is what I found from my years in the classroom. I would have colored sheets of transparencies, and every child that had it down on their thing that they were dyslexic, I'd give them a colored transparency. And every day I'd give them a different color. And then when we'd gone through all the colors, I just spread them out on the table, and I said, grab one on the way in. And everybody would grab one, and I had plenty of every color. And then I'd say, why don't you keep that so it can help you in other classes also? Because everybody, if you're dyslexic and you put a colored transparency, everything stops moving around when you're reading it. and when you're working on things. So I know that we sometimes reverse numbers and whatnot, so or letters. And so if you're using a color transparency, a lot of that stops. And to know what color works best for you, try one color every day and then put them all out there and see which one you naturally grab, because that'll be the one that works the best for you. It's a way of dealing with dyslexia, so it's not as bad. Is that not cool?
That's really cool.
Yeah, my years in the classroom. Okay, Pat, are you ready?
Yes, yes, yes. Danielle,
okay.
You are a very well, I guess I would say, developed person. I'm not speaking about physically. I'm talking about well-rounded. You know, you understand a lot of things, and you have this big heart. And what's happened is that you seem to be attracted to people that you can fix up. In other words, you can just meet them and say, oh, I can help you with that, or yes, uh-huh, well, don't worry about that, you know, we can work, you know. And what the advice is to you is that you need to date someone who is as well-rounded with the get up and go and the desire to be somebody and do something, and not keep being attracted to these guys that you want to help, you want to fix them up. Now, I don't know if that seems accurate to you at all, because sometimes we never look at ourselves the way other people do. You know, you're looking that this guy, just you broke up and he had commitment issues and so forth and so on. Well, I'm glad that that happened, because he would not have been strong enough for you. So when you're 28 years old, you will have found someone, and that person is going to be a very serious relationship, and he will ask you, well, I'll say to partner with him or marry him or, you know, whatever the situation is. And you may or may not do that, because you will be smart enough to know that if there are any red flags, that you, that might not be a step you want to take. Okay?
Okay.
So I don't know how many guys, you know, you might date between now and then, but sometime in your 28th year, it'll be the first person that you've ever looked at that you thought, you know, he's somebody I might could marry. He's somebody I really might could marry. Now, at 18, we probably think we're going to marry the star of the football team when we date him. But, I mean, you know, we have to mature a little bit and make sure we've got somebody that's going to be a keeper. So don't fret about y'all breaking up, okay, because I think you are needing to find people who are as on point or have as much to offer as you do. Okay?
Okay, yeah, and that's weird. I've always thought 28 was going to be the year I'd get married.
Well, honey, you may have a little bit of psychic in you. That's good that you're trusting your intuition and valuing your intuition. I think that's good, and I'm glad you called in. It was nice meeting you.
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle, and I'm glad you got your own intuition confirmed. I always think that's great when that happens. Again, if somebody else would like to call in, the number here is 888-627-6008. And you can ask Pat any kind of question. Also, if you'd like to find how to contact Pat, her website is spiritualbeginnings101.com. The 101 is a number, of course, and beginnings always has two N's in it. I think a lot of us would misspell that one naturally, but it's spiritualbeginnings101.com. Okay, so, Pat, I have another question for you.
Sure.
And that is, I know a lot of people call you, and they get what you call a soul reading, but you do different kinds of readings. So what would you suggest first, and what is contained in each of those readings?
Well, if you talked about what people are curious about, you know, and what they most would like to do, I think the people that want to get the soul reading are people who are very spiritually oriented, you know. and they recognize that they have a purpose. And sometimes they're in a job and it's not very fulfilling, or they're just, you know, stringing along in life and haven't found the right person or what have you. And that soul reading is the plan that God / your soul made for your life. And it tells you about the lessons that you're here to work on, the karmic lessons from some of your past lives. And people just say, oh, my God, I knew I kept having a problem there, but I didn't know that this was a lesson, you know. It also talks about the purposes for this life, what it is that you're supposed to achieve. And then we go into what the soul has given you as some timelines, when things will happen in your life. And what I think the most rewarding thing is for somebody to know what their mission here is, and when that's all going to start. So it sort of talks about what has happened to you, where you are now, and where the soul wants you to be, and what will be happening. So it's in thirds, like this is the first third of your life, and these are the lessons you've been stumbling around on. Then the middle of your life is, let's get married, let's have a career, let's have kids, let's find our skills and talents, let's become a responsible citizen. And then the last third of your life, the soul kind of takes over and leads you into the purpose of your life that's more like a spiritual thing of being helpful to other people. So that's the one I recommend that everybody get first, because after that, you know who you are. The real popular one, of course, is always if you don't have Mr. Wonderful or Miss Right, then you need to do this session. And this is a lesson based on psychology, where we go through and figure out what the right person would be for you. We make a list of the based on past experiences of what works for you, and then we put that out into the universe to attract the right person for you. And then, of course, there's always the three most important past lives. Everybody likes to look at that and hear about what had happened to them in ancient times or past, you know, any time in history. It's always very interesting. But the point of that is that many times those three past lives illustrate to you the gifts that you've brought into this life, and you say, oh my God, I always wanted to be an accountant, and I'm over here working on a 9-to-5 job in TV, you know. And so these past lives help you see where some of your gifts and talents are and what would make you happy. There are lots of others. For spiritual people, Sharon, I think the one I love to do is to let you meet the guides and angels that are around you, that are, most people don't know they even have them. Most people don't even know what a guide is. So it's wonderful if you're on a spiritual track to find out who the soul has placed around you to help you and to keep you guided. So there are a lot of ways that you can, you know, help yourself and find out about yourself by doing these various readings. They're, you know, like people like for you to do the reading about your name, just like, you know, you were just helping her to understand about herself by the way her name is. So the more we can find out about ourselves, the more we can go forward in some, you know, a positive way, I think.
Well, and I think a lot of what we come here for is to just get to know ourselves incredibly well and what we think of ourselves versus what other people think of us. I mean, it's always good to have feedback to look at that and go, how do I feel about that? You know, do I feel like that's true? Do I feel like that's not true? You know, are they seeing something that's there that I'm not seeing, or they just totally missed the mark? I think that feedback's important, but I think what's most important is how you feel about yourself.
Exactly. And most people take in the negative. They, you know, because of the way people put us down, and our parents are trying to help us, and they say, now, I told you not to do that, that's not right, blah, blah, blah. And so sometimes by the time we're 14 or 15, we're really questioning, you know, ourselves with insecurities, because so many people have said, put a red mark on the paper at school, no, you can't write this story right, or your math is horrible, you don't take enough. And so I think it's wonderful when you can have a reading and find out all of the positive things the soul has given you, so you know where to go, you know, where to go to latch on to and get some self-esteem. So I agree with you. That's why that name reading that you do is very valuable, and why that soul reading is very valuable.
Yeah, I think they both are, and it just helps you to focus in and say and look at yourself from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. What's always interesting to me is what we say versus what somebody hears. Okay,
oh,
because we hear with our ears, but we listen with our heart.
Yep.
And some people turn both of them off. But it's really amazing to me how they're not even hearing what you're intending. Okay? So we're going to continue this conversation right after our break. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
How would you like to be able to read other people's minds? Well, the next best thing is here. When you know how to read a person's name, you know how the person thinks, feels, and behaves. Each letter in our name holds a key to unlock our true essence. Our name contains both our gifts and challenges in this lifetime. Nemology science discovers personality secrets hidden in the placement of the letters of our names, including the first and last impression people remember about us. Sharon shows us how to interpret the arrangement of letters as outlined in her book, Know the Name, Know the Person. Sharon Lynn Wyeth created Nemology Science after 18 years of research and testing her theories, and has supported thousands of people around the world in understanding themselves and others better. You'll enjoy Sharon's unique teachings as she shares her system to learn the gifts behind your given birth name. Even if you don't like your birth name, there are jewels in this book. If you're thinking of changing your name, ready to name your child, or wanting to get along better with others, this is the book for you. If you'd like to improve your relationships and change your life for the better, get the book today, Know the Name, Know the Person, or visit www.knowthename.com. That's www.knowthename.com.
Welcome back to Know the Name, Know the Answers. This is your host, Sharon Lynn Wyeth. Our guest today is Pat Robertson Rice, a spiritual counselor. You can reach Pat via her website, spiritualbeginnings101.com. And remember, beginnings has two N's in it. So in case you thought, oh, this website isn't working, it's probably because we're having a hard time spelling beginnings. It's spiritualbeginnings101.com. So right before the break, we were talking about how we hear with our head and we listen with our heart. And I want to challenge everybody that's listening to this show to really stop your head when you're hearing somebody and you're speaking with somebody or they're speaking with you, and really feel what they're saying. It is the most interesting thing, and it's a lot more accurate than necessarily than what you're hearing with your head. And I think some of that is that we put our own coloring on what we're hearing, but when we listen with our heart, we get it clearly. I had a funny thing happen, Pat. I was talking with one of the doctors that I know, and this doctor had told me a while back, okay, about 3 years ago, that this thing she saw in my leg and what she thought it was and everything, and so I went in and had surgery, and all is good. But I talked to her just recently, and I said, you know, that caused me to have fear, and I never make good decisions when I'm fearful. And so I didn't even think about alternative ways like I normally do of what could I have done to open the veins, you know, what supplements, what could I have changed, what could I, whatever. I just went in and had the surgery, and I said, you know, I hope the surgery worked. I had a fabulous doctor, but my leg looks the same, you know, so I don't know. You know, and so I don't know at all. And so she said, her reaction was, oh, so I didn't do a good job when I recommended what you had because it put you in fear. And I thought, you're not responsible for my reaction. You're not responsible for the choices I make because of my reaction. I asked you for the information. You gave me the information. As far as I was concerned, we were good. But she went on the defense.
Of course.
And I thought, isn't it interesting? Somebody could say that to me, and I'd go, interesting reaction you had when I gave you neutral information. You know?
Mm-hmm.
you know, and now I really define fear differently. I used to think of it as future events as already real, where we're projecting into the future and pulling it into the present. It's like saying, I've got to know how to do calculus, but I'm only doing algebra right now, and oh my God, I'm afraid of calculus. But by the time you get there, it's not that hard, okay?
Yeah.
So now I look at fear as just literally it's a lack of information. We go into fear when we don't have enough information, and we just need to be seeking more information.
Well,
because
you know,
go ahead. I was just going to say, like at the beginning of the show where you were talking about fear, that you're seeing so many of your clients going into fear. And I thought it's because we don't have enough information.
Mm-hmm. And there's an old, I think they were called anagrams or something, F-E-A-R stands for false evidence appearing real, was one of the things I very first memorized when I got into metaphysics. False evidence appearing real. And I guess we could apply that to what we see every day almost on television when we're trying to figure out this coronavirus. The other thing I think is worth talking about tonight, Sharon, is that, you know, if God had a plan, you know, I mean, I know he has a plan, and, you know, we talked about he works in mysterious ways. We are being given the most beautiful pictures, and since we all sit in front of our TV and we can see the faces and the tears and hear the trembling in the voices, if we had tried to write a book about how compassion works, I don't think anybody could ever have done as good a job as they show us on the news every night, where we see these nurses who are the family cannot go into the hospital, and here's this person dying right by himself, you know, or herself. And the nurses, did you all see the segment last night where the nurses were holding, each day they came in to the family stood outside about their father, and the nurses wrote on paper and stuck it up in the window, he's doing better today, he's still on the respirator, so forth and so on. And then the people outside in the family were holding signs for the father. Now, he's in the bed. He can't see them. So the nurses, first thing, would come in and tell the father what the family was saying to him every day. And I thought, wow, that is the most beautiful sign of compassion, where those, you know, the nurses were going above and beyond their job to help the man who was sick and dying, and to help the people outside who stood there 5 and 6 hours a day for their father because they couldn't go in the hospital. And we see that every night, every day, you know, on the news, how these people have. And how about the kids from that were off from college that said they saw TV where the farmers were dumping their potatoes in the river, you know, and the corn was going bad because they didn't have any, the trucks broke down, you know, the business wasn't working. And they all got their SUVs and their mama's station wagon, and they drove 500 miles up there and loaded these things up with potatoes and corn or whatever the farmer had, tomatoes and all this stuff that was going to rot, and brought it back to their town for the food bank. When they saw how many,
how incredible.
These were just college kids. And
see,
now
I think
they've
that's
started
so incredible.
You know, and they've talked to all their friends into driving big, you know, borrowing trucks or whatever they were doing. And every night it's where somebody innovatively has answered the call. And they've done things where that no one, I mean, some people raise money to get those big, rent them to go up where these farmers just were complaining because they didn't have any way to get the crops and to get them for the food banks in their state. They would drive all night long to go up and get these crops and bring them back to their food banks. So,
I think people are basically good.
People are basically good. Yes, they are. and they rise to the occasion. This is what I was talking about. We got two lessons going on here. One is, can you step out of fear, face your greatest fear, and step out of it and do something and, you know, make your character, build your character. And the other one is to reevaluate what's really important to you. You know.
Yeah. And what is really important, as is it money, as long as you have what you need without excess, or is it helping somebody else? Is it going into fear? I always think when you go into fear, it's the time to really see how you can help somebody else. Because when you're helping somebody else, it helps you get out of your own fear also.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, compassion and unconditional love are two of the higher qualities that you can obtain. And so we're getting, you know, this coronavirus has given all of us a chance to step up and help our fellow man, you know, and it's given us a chance to see a small thing that we could do to help someone else. And I don't think there is a soul that ever went up to heaven and they said, well, what were your greatest, what do you miss the most about being down on earth? I don't think anybody has ever said, my 50-hour-a-week job. Or my sports car.
Yeah.
I think they said, I miss my wife, or I miss my husband, or I miss my kids, or I miss being down there with my family. I don't think anybody ever said they miss their 50-hour work week job. And I think we're being given a chance to see what's important to us. And I think everybody has realized family. I mean, my God, look at the people in New York and how many of their families have had to face the death of one or two people in their family.
You know, what's interesting to me as you were saying that about the hospital is I was thinking about having a baby and being all by yourself because your family couldn't be there with you. Or your mate couldn't be there with you, and so you're alone having the child. I think that would be difficult, too.
Yeah, and then the baby can't stay with you because you're in the hospital, see, with the virus. So there was a lady that had given birth, I think she didn't see her baby for 12 days. Because she had...
Oh, how horrible. That's your bonding time.
Yeah, and they couldn't let the baby go out in the world because it had been exposed, so to speak, you know. So they kept the baby there in the... I don't know if it was in the NIC unit or if it was just in the baby's place, because the mother, she couldn't be with the baby because she was infected. Oh, I've seen several cases like that, you know, when people were, the nurses and doctors would line up and clap for them, and they saw their baby for the first time after 2 weeks or, you know, 10 days or something. They gave the birth, but then the baby couldn't stay there because it could have gotten infected.
People are incredibly flexible. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a good time to be flexible. I think some of the hardest part may be yet to come, only in the way, Pat, that so many people I hear say, I can't wait till we can get back to normal. I don't think we're ever going to get back to what we used to consider normal.
No, there's not going to be a normal till we iron out, you know, where the jobs will be. I mean, how you can go to a workplace that is, you know, certainly not suited if when the flu season comes back and they talk about the coronavirus may come back with it. I mean, they've got to change the whole workplace. They got to change the mass transport. I mean, everything we talked about. And you know, some corporations are going to realize we don't need to have all these people here. It's been working fine for them to work from home and come in 2 days a week and stay home three, you know, and do their work. I think a lot of structuring is going to be done very differently now. And that may be beneficial, like we talked about, or not, you know.
The ones I feel for, I think, the most, and probably because of my 40 years in education, is the school kids. Because you get a whole bunch of different children from different backgrounds with different ideologies, and you get them a classroom talking, and not only are they learning the subject area, they're also learning how to get along with all these various personalities.
Amen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, as a former school teacher, too, I called my niece the other day, and I said, oh, my God, what are y'all going to do now, you know, that the kids are turning in the papers? How are you going to give them a grade, you know? And she said, well, yeah, it's bad because a lot of our students didn't have computers at home. And, you know, so the parents had to come. She said, if they don't have computers, we had to make packets of worksheets for them. And the parents had to come to the school and pick up the worksheets. And there was nobody to help them but the people in their house. And maybe if it was math or something, Sharon, they may not have even remembered how to do algebra, you know, the parents. And so it's a grand mess, if you ask me, but out of a mess, out of chaos, always comes order. So maybe there will be a better way to structure the schools, you know. Maybe they'll realize.
It'll be interesting to see what happens on that way. You know, that's the one that I'm most curious about. Well, Pat, what is one short, very short, because we're almost out of time, one short thing or idea that you would like to leave everybody with? One something that you think, wow, if we could just think about it this way a little bit differently, it could help us.
I'm going to say it the third time. God works in mysterious ways. And what looks like the most horrible thing in your life that you have had to be corralled at home and you don't know if you're going to have your job, it may be that this horrible coronavirus may change your job so that you like it more, you know, or it may change your job so that it's more beneficial to the employee than it used to be. I would
How
like
incredible.
To look
I
at
I want
it.
To thank you so much, Pat, for being on the show
Thanks.
With us tonight and taking your
Inviting
time to join
me.
Us again. Uh-huh. If you'd like to be get a session with Pat. She's just phenomenal. You can go to spiritualbeginnings101.com. And again, beginnings is spelt with two N's, spiritualbeginnings101.com. Next week, our guest is Julie Salen. She is a psychic, and she's been on before. If you want to go back in the archives and listen to that one to see if you'd like to call in or not. This is Sharon Lynn Wyeth, the host of Know the Name, Know the Answers. Thank you for joining us, and I am now signing off.